Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from around the world to tell you about how they feel about the news from around the world. This is episode number 25 for May 2010. Hello everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is the show where we get people from different countries, cultures, and background to tell us about the way they received the news that have made the past few weeks. So I have a fantastic group of hosts with me today. I have, of course, as usual, the one who makes the show what it is, Turkey. How's it going?
Yes, hey Patrick. I think you should have gotten a copy of the Molly rant. Jingle. We need that, I think, this show.
Yes, that could have. I hope you're going to be ranting, Molly. If you don't know, Molly Wood is one of the hosts of Buzz Out Loud, and she's with us today also.
Hello. I feel I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because you've all had a whole day to foment on the news, and I'm still having my coffee. Well, so I have to get up to speed and angry, and it's kind of early for me.
I'm sure that what Turkey says will make you angry very fast.
I will just wait for some sort of motivator.
There you go. So Molly is from California, and Buzz Out Loud is a famous podcast on the tech news of the day. You do it daily.
Yes.
And so you're going to be talking about the political things that make our daily lives, hopefully, something like
hopefully.
That.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And we also have Paolo with us today, who is sort of a mixed cultural monster, kind of. He is from South... I don't know why I said monster. It wasn't very kind, was it? He's from South Africa, but he also has roots in Greece and Portugal. How's it going, Paolo?
Hey there, Patrick. Hey guys. I'm a bit of a mongrel in a way, I guess. My heritage is Greek and Portuguese, and I consider myself a South African. Born here in South Africa, but heritage is from Europe.
So your connection from South Africa is a little bit laggy. So I hope you listeners, you fine people, will excuse us if there is a little bit of delay between our question answers and general conversation with Paolo. And we actually have a surprise, an extra guest who's going to join us. And Molly, I hope you're ready because there's something big coming. Someone from your past, dig what? Far, far away, and here comes someone else. Someone else that you haven't spoken to in a long time.
That's
Tom
right.
Merritt.
At least not by voice.
Yay!
Hey, Molly.
Hey, so Tom.
You should have come over for coffee and pancakes.
I know. Crazy Frenchman wanted it to be a surprise.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So it's sort of a reunion since you left the shows that Molly does a long time ago. How do
well,
you
2 weeks in internet time, that's years.
That's years. It's like it never happened almost.
Yeah.
No.
I remember those days.
So we usually...
Plus I'm thrilled because this takes all the pressure off of me. I no longer have to sound intelligent at all.
So
get ready for the Gadgetsified episode of the Phileas Club.
That's going to be fun. We usually only have one person from a country, and today we have two people, not only from the same country, but from California. Tom Merritt, if you don't know, was one of the co-founders, can we say that, of Buzz Out Loud?
Sure.
And he left that show to go to the Twit Network a couple of weeks ago. His show starts in a few days now. Tom.
Yeah, Tuesday, June 1st.
We'll talk about it a little bit later, but let's get the show rolling for now. Thank you all for joining. And I guess the first thing the big thing is going to be from an international point of view is what's happening in Greece. So obviously for, you know, Europe, for France, it's very important since Greece is basically the anchor that is sinking our ship at the moment. But I'm curious to know what you guys have heard about this. So basically, we talked about Greece being bankrupt and needing a lot of bailout money from the European Union in the past month. And I mean, in last episode, and the situation has changed a little bit. Basically, everyone is now agreeing to give money to Greece, and because if they don't, then things are going to explode. And since Germany mainly has been dragging its heels for so long, the situation is deemed to be a lot worse than if we had given billions of dollars of euros to Greece a couple of months ago, and the euro is sinking, and people are... There's a funny situation here. It's sort of people are talking about, jokingly, about how we might go back to our currencies before the euro, and no one is taking this seriously, obviously. It's never going to happen. But the mere fact that people are joking about it shows how tremendous the crisis is at the moment. The euro has lost a huge part of its value to compared to the dollar, which sucks because I'm going to be in the US in a few short weeks. I'm not going to be able to go shopping crazy. And so it's not really panic at the moment yet, but it's sort of very deep and serious concerns and also a little bit of anger towards the Greek... Well, anger might be a strong word, but we are a little bit concerned by the fact that Greece has eaten up all the money that we sent it, and they might do it again because we're not certain they're going to change enough to actually get back on the right track. So I guess that feeling is easily understandable. What I'm very curious to know is to know from Paolo, who has, as we were saying, roots in the Greek community. How do you guys see it from Greece? Because what we hear is Greek people, the people of Greece, is also very angry and striking and making demonstrations and all of that. And we're like, guys, you're getting the money. You should be happy. You should be celebrating.
I think, Patrick, that from the Greek's point of view, they look at it in a very, very different light. I mean, from my point of view, I feel the Greeks don't have really the grounds to contest what the euro is helping. And I think the way the Greeks look at it is that they've been living their lives very, very happily. You know, they've been getting a lot of government, a lot of people in Greece, they get more than one pension fund, and there's a lot of things in Greece where people kind of rape the system and they get something for nothing. They don't see it that way. That's how I see it. But I think they feel that they've been wrong because now that's been taken away from them.
Right. We've been hearing a lot about. Well, not a lot, but things like your bonus. If you're a government worker, for example, you get a bonus if you get to work on time. And what the way we perceive it is they're getting angry because these kinds of things are getting taken away, and they are demonstrating because they want to keep their bonus for getting to work on time. And we're like, are you kidding us? Bankrupt. You're bankrupt.
I think the thing in Greece is that they feel that these things that they're getting, like in Greece, if you have a name day, there's a certain holiday that's called the name day where they celebrate your name, like my name Paolo or your name Patrick, and that's more important than a birthday. there, and you're allowed to take off. It's perfectly socially acceptable to take a day off. And to them, I think their work ethic is completely different to, say, the English or the French or the Americans. Not to say that they're completely in the right about the way they work, but the Greeks have a very different way of looking at work, you know, especially
Saying that the Greeks have a different work ethics, like lower work ethics from the French, is saying a lot, because we don't do crap. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, for the Greeks, if you get a government job, from what I see, it's almost like you're made in life. You know, like you've really reached a really good job. Not to say that there's anything wrong with a government job, but because the government really supports you, and maybe to an extent that's just too much to the detriment of the government, you know.
Well, we'll talk about this a little bit more, I'm sure, when we get to the French part of the news, because we've been having strikes for things you will not believe. But let's go to maybe Saudi Arabia for now. I'm sure what you guys, the way you guys see it, as you see everything that doesn't have a direct correlation with Saudi Arabia, is we don't really give a crap.
Oh, well, actually, we give a crap.
Ah, damn it. I'm wrong again.
Oh, I love doing that to you. No, actually, it's the whole situation is affecting Saudi Arabia in different aspects. For one, people are kind of happy that the euro is crashing because we're linked to the dollar. So when the dollar is stronger, our economy is stronger. So that's one aspect that people are enjoying. And the other aspect that people are afraid of is Saudi Arabia and Qatar, Kuwait, and Bahrain just recently signed an agreement to start working on their single currency. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on, to see how that works out with the European Union, to decide whether that idea is still a good idea or is it a horrible idea.
Why would it be a horrible idea?
You just saw what's going on with the euro and the economy the European countries. So.
So they're like, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, let's keep an eye on Europe and Greece and Portugal and whatever. Let's see what's going on. Let's move very, very, very slow for now.
So they were in the starting blocks, and all of a sudden the euro crashes, and they're like, wait a second.
And it was difficult to get to the starting block. They've been working on it for years and years, and finally when they got on the starting block, suddenly the euro crashes.
That's, you know, one thing I don't really understand, maybe some of you will be able to explain it to me, but when the euro was first introduced, it was, €1 was $1.2 more or less.
Yeah, then they were almost exactly the same.
Yeah, and then it rose, and it came to 1.4, 1.45. It was amazing how, well, low the dollar was and how high the euro became. But now, it's coming back to the level where it was. It's not like it's worth, you know, half its previous worth. It's back to the level where it was when it was first introduced. So I understand that it makes it more difficult for people to export stuff from the EU, but it makes it easier to import other stuff. I mean, you can buy stuff cheaper from the outside. No, that's
actually,
the opposite.
Actually,
sorry,
yeah.
But... Yeah. I mean, it's not like the value has been
more.
Right. Yeah.
No, but the thing is, when it comes to the situation, is it's not that right now that the euro is down. The question is how much will it crash? Is this and how many countries are going to go bankrupt and so on? It's going to affect for a few years. There, it's not about now. Let's see. Oh, it's not that big of a deal. The euro is still stronger than the dollar and so on. It might have went down. But the question is, what's going to happen in a year, two, three, four? And that's where people are afraid. And
I think the thing most Europeans are afraid of is that other countries are going to follow the Greek trend. Okay, Euros really helped out Greece and bailed them out of a lot of their issues. But what's to say that Portugal and Spain are not going to follow the same suit? And then what does Europe do? You know, I think that's where the Europeans are really concerned.
We've been hearing the D word, the devaluation word. We might, you know, devaluate the money. Is that the English way of saying things?
Yeah, that it would be...
Devalue currency.
I had started to the impression that I was getting was that part of the Greek bailout and part of the reasoning behind the Greek bailout was actually a vote of confidence in the euro itself. And is that, you know, the idea that the EU was really going to put that the weight not behind just propping up Greece, but behind propping up the very idea of that currency, and that this was the first kind of, you know, stop me if I'm making no sense at all. But is part of the fear in Europe now the idea that if Greece goes and Portugal goes and that the euro continues to be devalued,
trying to stop a landslide.
That concept itself will die, that, you know, it'll be like everybody's going to, I mean, you alluded to that there are whispers of people going back to, you know, the in-country currencies, but do you think that's a real possibility?
Well, it's not at this point. I wouldn't say it's at this point, but if Portugal and Spain go, which is not completely outlandish, it's we have to do something. Devaluation is one possibility. Going back to your previous currencies and saying, you know, stuff you all, we're on our own, is another possibility. No one is thinking about it seriously at this point, but imagine the effect that Greece had by crashing. If you add to that Portugal and Spain, we're sort of in trouble, so I don't know what we can do. I mean,
what this shows is the difficulty of having a monetary union without a real strong political union. Because in the United States, I mean, California and a few other states are almost in as bad a straits as Greece, certainly comparable to Spain, perhaps. But you don't hear about, you know, the collapse of the dollar union and you know, how are we going to bail out California? There's a little bit of like, hey, should there be federal aid and how much should there be and this and that. But because it's a very strong centralized political union, it's not a matter that threatens the way that the euro threatens, because you're pretending to be one big country economically when in fact you're not.
Right. And to be completely,
I think it's also a very different issue in the States, because the main problem with the Greek problem is that it's a disorganization where the countries don't the right arm's doing and the left arm's doing in regards to their finances, where I think the Americans, they have a better grasp on the way their economy runs, and if there's a problem, they know where to solve it and where not to solve it. Whereas the Greeks are still fumbling around, I think, and they've kind of been in this path for so long, and now it has to change. They don't know what to do, and getting controlled by the euro is something they're not happy with.
That's very nice of you to say, but I know there's plenty of people in the U.S. who would disagree that we're all that much better, at least on the, especially on the state level and the city levels. But I think your point, you know, does point, it brings up that issue of like Greece is allowed to run its own affairs to a certain extent, where you know, the state of Nebraska is not.
And the thing
is,
also
there's a safety on what they can do damage wise.
Yeah, because a lot of what we've been hearing about Greece is corruption, laxism, you know, a lot of issues that are not up to the. I mean, obviously, no country has no corruption and runs completely smoothly. But from what we are hearing, there is a level of that in Greece that should just not happen in our, you know, European Union. If it's okay, countries in the EU are expected to behave at a certain level in a certain way in economic ways and to be responsible. And what lacks tremendously in Greece, I don't think it's quite the same in Portugal and Spain. But we feel like the problem with Greece was not that there was there was bad management and bad budgeting, but also it was plain misconduct with at the governmental level, and that's one of the reasons why we're so angry about it.
Well, and then it doesn't seem like the bailout is actually going to solve that problem, because it doesn't seem like there is an accompanying effort to change the way business is conducted. It seems like what there really is funneling money into Greece and then creating massive debt.
Well, there is talk of...
But you still have that sort of insolvency issue.
Exactly, which is why, you know, I was saying in the beginning, the problem is they might do it again.
Right.
We don't have there is talk of having more control over the way Greece... manages its finances, but we're not certain we're going to be able to do it. And Greece itself, it might instill a shock big enough that they will actually get their crap together, but what if they don't? Paolo, well, you wanted to...
You have more countries to worry about, Patrick, when it comes to the EU. You got all of these new Eastern European countries, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, Hungary, so on. So Greek is only the start. I think Greek came at the right moment for the EU. I think Greek would give the EU a good lesson and makes them ready for any future events that are similar, because of all of these new countries joining, it's going to be a lot more dangerous in the future. So I think this is a good lesson for the EU to work on it and build a system to avoid something like this in the future.
There's definitely some truth to what you're saying, but I also think that these other countries are very, I might be mistaken in this, but that's my impression, they're very young and economically dynamic, whereas Greece was getting lazy and complacent. I'm sorry, Greek people, I'm sure some of you are yelling at your iPod.
To be fair, I did read at least one article that suggested that Greece's problems mostly came from not properly collecting tax revenues, that the spending was actually relatively average compared to other EU countries. It was just that they had this sort of shadow economy where a lot of transactions were happening and they weren't collecting taxes.
Where? That's the real question.
Sorry, Paolo,
because
we didn't
spending,
hear you.
Spending on I just said spending where? Because if you're spending on salaries, I think it's another. If you're just spending on the infrastructure, I would say, yeah, maybe it's just on par with everyone else in Europe. But I think the main issue is who's getting paid and who's getting paid what at a government level. That's what's really hurting the country. And where is that money coming from?
Bonus to get there on time? Come on.
You're just thinking of it the wrong way, Patrick. It's a penalty for not getting there on time.
There you go.
So, you guys, all in the spin.
In the U.S., have you guys heard about it at all? Or I'm sure, you know, it has to affect, it affects the world economically. So surely you've had
the bonuses or just the whole Greek thing? Because we definitely have heard about the whole Greek thing.
We've been agitating for bonuses, actually. I have been at work. Yeah.
The whole bonus thing reminds me of the Muni system in San Francisco. It's the transportation system where they are constantly under attack for having $100,000 salaries and paid, you know, time and a half overtime on top of that for driving a bus, which you can argue is actually, you know, a dangerous job in some parts of San Francisco. But, you know, you get these stories of like, why do they deserve these outlandish overtime payments, and why do they deserve these huge bonuses and vacations? And
how much did you say they were getting paid?
Around $100,000for
really?
Many people who've been there a long time. Yeah,
geez. That's
in the San Francisco Bay Area, so it is that's a salary number that is has to be considered in the context of cost of living.
Quite as big as it sounds. True.
Yeah, it's okay. It's shocking.
Well,
but it's
I live in Paris. It's not like it's cheap. So.
Right.
Yeah. That's
I mean,
true.
You could definitely come here and be a bus driver, but you'll have to work your way up to the $100,000.
Oh, okay. It's not.
And
worth
I don't
it,
think it's. I don't think it's very fun. No.
Sure.
I mean, but I have the impression that the Greek financial crisis is kind of all over the news here. I mean, I feel like it's one of the few sort of, you know, I mean, we're not hearing about the riots in Thailand unless we're buying The Economist, but certainly Greece's financial issues seem to be top of mind here. And I think it's because our own economic recovery right now is really fragile. And there's the sense that if there's sort of a large and domino effect of, you know, collapse of countries in the EU, that we're kind of everybody's screwed because we're all moving debt around at this point, and if nobody ever has enough money to pay it back, then what do we do?
That's my impression. Is it's usually reported in U.S. sources from the point of view of Wall Street reacted today to the Greek crisis in this way, and that's how you learn about it.
Well, it's often reported like that in our countries also. I mean, most of the time is markets crumble again, and like they have one half day of dim hope, and everyone starts to, you know, look out in the sky and think that tomorrow might be better, and then the tomorrow is even worse than the day before. So it's not very, you know, I'm sort of getting worried talking to you guys now. Maybe I should not think about it that much and bury my
head in the let's
sand.
Talk about Korea sinking warships or China having a property bubble. That'll make us feel better.
Yeah. I know. Biggest oil spill ever. Yay!
So, yeah, that obviously has been making the news, I think, everywhere. I shouldn't say funny part, but apparently BP is plugging the thing over and over again, and it's never working. What the hell are
those
they
jokesters.
Doing?
Well, they're just still. Apparently that is other scientists at this point aren't that concerned that they're doing this thing that they call top kill, where they're trying to sort of fill the hole with mud, basically slow down the oil flowing out by sort of covering it up with mud. But apparently that is a process that can take a long time. So they haven't given any progress reports yet, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to work.
Well,
although apparently,
you know that if it was working and if they knew it was working, they would have reported on it.
Right. They are now starting to add chunks of rubber and sort of other debris to the mud to make the mud heavier. And they just kind of keep adjusting, I guess, the heaviness of the mud and then the flow of the pumping the mud toward the thing. I don't know. It all sounds like impossible to me, but...
So what's
going to
happen
still
if they
have several plans?
What happens if they can't plug it?
We die.
No,
and by
we don't.
I mean the world.
You mean the shrimp die?
We'll wait for the environment to take care of it, like all the Republicans are saying.
It eventually kills most of the southern coast of the United States, yeah.
Because Republicans just hate the entire idea of the chaos effect. I'm sure that if all the shrimp die, that wouldn't have any ramifications for the rest of the world. How could it?
It's just shrimp.
It's just all the shrimp that
They're
all
very
the other
small.
Things eat. And then, oh, God, we're going to die.
Yeah. So the prospect is not very bright there either.
Well, you know what? They're taking some time from a supercomputer in Austin to do some 3D modeling to help not only figure out if the plugging of the hole is working and develop strategies for that, but also to figure out what's going to happen to the coast as the oil moves out and what they can do to try to mitigate that as well.
I thought you were going to say they're using computer time to do 3D modeling to show it on CNN or something.
No, they're using Google Maps
probably
for that.
Also that.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't they have a video feed of the actual spill coming out?
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
There was just this phenomenal photo or a short video, I think, of like an eel swimming up to basically the spill, you know, and kind of just looking at. I mean, it's remarkable to see this fish.
The horror on the face
this
of this eel.
Basically, yeah, just kind of looking back and forth like it's watching tennis and clearly thinking to itself, what the hell?
Well, one thing that was actually really surprising to me was when the spill first happened, we had a report on TV about people from Florida and how so many of them are dependent on the oil economy that and on BP that they would mostly be okay with the oil business taking, you know, starting again once the spill is dealt with. Because it does provide them with all their jobs, and they know it's going to be horrible and destroy the ecosystem. But at the end of the day, once everything's cleaned up in a couple of years, they're all going to go back to it. Now, the reports I saw today were a little bit different because now the oil has actually reached the shores and they're getting angry. But is there any truth to that, to the fact that they're going to forgive everything?
Well, if you think about it, the entire world is going to forgive everything to some extent. I mean, we're all sort of saying this is terrible and who knows ecologically what could happen from disrupting the balance of the ocean like this. But we're all going to keep driving cars. We're all going to keep being oil dependent, you know, to the extent that we are. I mean,
I don't drive a car. I'm doing my part. What are you guys doing?
Do you use electricity?
No.
Uh-huh.
I have hamsters in wheel things that provide me with
any plastic.
Do you ride buses or trains or something?
All right, you got me. Fine.
Any plastic products in your house that may be derived from petroleum?
Maybe. I'll have to check. I'll get back to you.
Do you fry your French fries in oil, Patrick? Do you?
I only eat French fries from McDonald's. But
even the Republicans, there was an article today saying that you know, California's candidates for governor are now both saying, oh, that drill baby drill thing, we're not as into that as we used
so
to
popular.
Be.
Yeah,
we're not. We don't like love that as much as we did before.
That's for people who don't know. The drill baby drill was the slogan, one of the things that the Republicans were chanting during the last election to say to show the fact that they wanted to drill for oil in the U.S. as much as they could, because that's you know, cool.
In protected
now it's turned into
areas.
We kind of should keep drilling some places.
Maybe,
baby,
but just really quietly.
All right, so
the government's going to step in to do anything about this.
So, the government has stepped in. I mean, they have advisors down there, and they're pushing BP. And the problem is, I think, and Molly, I think you've probably read up on this more than I have. So correct me if I'm wrong, but there just aren't that many people who know how to do this.
Right.
And so, you can have people with clipboards standing around as much as you want, but the experts are so few that once you've got them working on it, you just kind of have to let them work.
Mm. And you almost have, right, you almost have to.
Because it kind of seems like it's
bigger. You Americans have to really just give up, stop drilling, buy the oil from us, and be happy. Saudi Arabia and Venezuela will be more than happy to sell you oil.
You never spill your oil.
Never. But, you know, I want to go back to one thing that Molly was saying. We're all going to keep driving our cars and everything. Certainly it's true, but you said in the same breath, both candidates for California are not so much into drilling anymore. Doesn't that mean that it does have some sort of an impact at one level? And, you know, it might mean that people are less into using oil? No?
I think people are going to be less into, you know, if anything, it's going to create a political catch-22 for candidates, because people will be less into drilling. I mean, certainly, you know, as soon as this bill happened, Arnold Schwarzenegger, our current governor in California, immediately stopped all plans for an offshore drilling project that was in the works. But the fact is, the oil consumption isn't decreasing. So I think, if anything, they will just have to be quieter. You know, there will be a period where we all oppose it and we all are pushing for better technologies, and then we say, we have the better technology, this is a spill-proof well, and then we just start doing it all over again. You know, and that's a depressing, it's a pessimistic view, but you know, until the demand really goes away, they're going to keep drilling. They're just maybe not going to be so, I mean, the whole drill baby drill thing was just gross and hedonistic and unrealistic anyway. So if anything, maybe they'll just be a little more circumspect about it, which would be nice. Mm.
So, Patrick, you think because politicians said no more, that means no more?
No. I'm not that naive, but I'm naive enough to believe that change does happen. You know, it's not like people look at this and say, oh, but, you know, everyone's still driving cars, and as if that happens and in one day everything changes. I do believe, however, that things like that might have a deeper, long-seeded effect that might transform into something down the line. It's going to chip away at this idea that exactly what we're saying, drill baby drill, is not that huge, proud slogan anymore. And it does change things in some people's minds. Now, it might go away in 2 or 3 years, but it's one factor of many that makes up the collective attitude towards oil. So it's not going to be enough, obviously, but maybe it's one more argument against.
I think it's definitely changed the momentum of the conversation in the United States, where up until the spill, there was very much a sort of the common man view was this whole environmental thing has been blown out of proportion and we're overreacting and we're not going to hit peak oil and it's not going to be that big a deal. And yeah, we should be green, but we don't need to rush into it. This has really changed that tone. I don't know that it's convinced anyone of, you know, to have a revelation and change their opinion, but the tone is much less about like, oh, green stuff, that's kind of silly. Now it's like, oh, maybe we do need to pay a little more attention to this. So it remains to be seen where that conversation is going to go from here, but it's definitely disrupted the momentum.
And what I do hope is that it will make the conversation about being green less political. Because that had become, like, if you are concerned about the environment, then you're a weirdo liberal. And that's just bizarre. I mean, it's like, if you're a human, you should be concerned about the environment. The idea that that was a liberal versus a conservative thing was just strange and is strange. And I'm hoping that it will, you know, we will start to see an oil spill like this as a human crisis and not something that has anything to do with politics.
It's sort of like what happened with Greece for the EU. It was very convenient, and then it happened at the right time to save us from future disasters. Sorry, Paolo, go ahead.
I think a lot of people forget about is that that's great. In the States, you guys make a big change to go green or go towards an alternative power like hydrogen or electricity or whatever the case may be in the future. But people forget that here in Africa or other third world areas, the demand for petroleum is going to continue. I mean, it's still going to be the cheapest and most easy to use resource that we have available to make things work in Africa or other third world areas. I mean, you guys in the States, okay, say you switch to electrical vehicles, then you can just plug into your house, no problem. But what happens to the guy in Africa who doesn't have an electricity socket in his wall, you know, and he uses his vehicle to get to and from places for his business? And this happens throughout Africa. I mean, how are these people going to get around? They're still going to demand petroleum.
Right. Well, and that is absolutely true. And one would hope, I mean, if you want to extend this conversation to how will this spill affect the rest of the world, that if it did make the United States stop fighting against environmental concerns, that it could lead to more people being interested in creating technologies that can help worldwide. You know, that's it's not that we're saying that, you know, once the United States figures it out, then everything's done. The rest of the world is fine. But, you know, you got to take care of your home first before you can help the rest of the world. And there's a lot of cool stuff being done in research and development to figure out ways to have portable solar power and portable internet and electric vehicles that will work in these kinds of situations. I've heard a lot of good stuff in India and Africa both. But yeah, it's a good thing to raise because that is an important point. You're not going to solve any kind of environmental problem by just fixing one country.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's finish up on the oil spill by asking, giving Turkey free rein to say anything he wants about this, and you know how you guys feel about the oil spill.
How we feel about the oil spill?
Well, you are kind of the oil kings of the world.
And that's their oil. The more they spill, the more they buy from us.
Okay. Well said. Should we talk a little bit about Gaza or switch to something happy?
Let's talk about the World Cup, since we have someone from South Africa. Although I don't like football, but
okay, I thought
or soccer, as the Americans like to call it.
Actually, Paolo, when you first contacted me, you suggested talking about the World Cup, which I wasn't convinced at first because I don't watch football, but it does affect, obviously, the economy of the country where it's being held. And surprise, it's South Africa.
Well, it's I think it's one of the most, it's the biggest event in the world, from what I understand. I mean, it's bigger than the Olympics in a lot of countries, and it's changing our country in a lot of good ways. For us, it's really the first time I think the world has gotten a view on South Africa since the end of the apartheid, and hopefully it ends out to be a good picture on how things have changed. I mean, we've had our problems, and you know, there's always growing pains in the country, and I'm a big supporter of South Africa and its future. I know a lot of people are doom and gloom and saying the country's not going anywhere or it's going to go to the dogs kind of thing. But I have a lot of hope for the country, and hopefully this really shines for us. You know, and there'll be issues. There'll be some horror stories, I'm sure, here and there. But hopefully it all comes together for us. It's an event.
The way, I don't know about you guys, but the image I have, again, I don't know anything, so I'm obviously wrong, but the image I have of South Africa is, as you said, since the end of the apartheid, it's basically gone to, well, crap. And
I thought you were going to say District 9, because that was sci-fi. That's not real.
I mean, that situation with the aliens landing. And
I'm so happy that Tom said that, because I was thinking it too.
But seriously, though, the way I see it is a very dangerous country, to the levels of, you know, some South American countries, and economy being sort of very slow, and just plain difficulties in the government and in the infrastructure. Things are not working. At least that's my image.
I think the thing with South Africa is that when the government changed over, you had a lot of people who came into power who were revolutionaries. These were people who wanted a change in the country. You know, they fought their whole lives for change, and suddenly they had all this power and no experience really to run a country or to make governmental decisions. Now they've been running the country, and they really have made some of the wrong decisions in a lot of ways. But the thing that I see for the future in the country is that those people who were revolutionaries, their kids are now getting better education. They're going to higher end schools. They're getting exposed to a lot more things that they would have never gotten exposed to. And I think their kids are the ones who are really going to be the ones who will shine in the future. Yes, we've got a lot of problems, especially with crime. I mean, crime is the biggest concern in this country, and it's a huge concern for the actual event here, because I think a lot of it's a big sport in Europe, and a lot of Europeans are coming here, and I think they're thinking, okay, we'll go to South Africa, we'll go to Johannesburg, go downtown, and you know, it's going to be safe. Like, we'll just walk around, take a bus here or there. It's not the case here. It's just too dangerous downtown. And the way people live in South Africa is far more in a protective way of life. I mean, it's very different to America, and it's very different to Europe. I mean, people are very concerned with their well-being and safety. Not to say you're not in the States, but we do it on a different level.
How is the World Cup going to help that situation? Are you guys spending money all of a sudden to make sure that the cities are safer, or that you have safer places? Or because if basically the World Cup is mostly hooligans going to downtown to have, you know, to look for trouble. And now after the Greeks, I'm getting the football fans angry. But
yeah, you want to watch out for that.
Yeah, they might actually
because they really are hooligans. They'll come after you, Patrick.
Oh my God! But how is the World Cup going to benefit the you know, South Africa in that respect? How, you know, the flow of money from the World Cup is going to help you out?
I don't think it's going to do anything for security in the country. The government is not spending its money on security. I mean, they may be trying to root up corruption, and that's really where all this crime stems from, is the corruption in the police force and the government. Because okay, I'm not gonna lie, I've given a bribe before, and most South Africans have. It's just a commonplace thing here nowadays, which is unfortunate, because say I get caught by the police for speeding, I could just give the guy R100 and he'll leave me alone, you know, whereas that would never fly in the States, and it would never fly in Europe, and they're not doing anything to change that, in my opinion. They're spending their money on infrastructure to host the games. That's where the bulk of the money is.
So okay,
I thought it was really wise that South Africa hosted the Rugby World Cup a couple of years back as sort of a test run with a big but not nearly as big crowd. Do you think there were lessons learned from that, or is it? I mean, there wasn't any major mistakes or anything then. So
we've hosted other. I mean, the Confederates Cup was here as well. That's a much smaller scale. I think that was really the test run of how things are going to run. But I don't think the country's really prepared for the scale of people coming here expecting to be able to walk around and you know, see the country. And because when you come to South Africa, it's not like you're coming just to see the game. I think a lot of people thinking, okay, this is an expensive trip, this is a far distance, we're going to go try see the country a bit. And I don't think the country's really geared up for that. I mean, our hospitals are barely coping with the current situation, never mind if we're getting hundreds of thousands of people visiting the country.
Well, Paolo, maybe I misunderstood then, but I thought I was under the impression from our previous conversations that the World Cup was going to make the situation in South Africa better. And everything I'm hearing from you now is concern and possible, you know, dangerous situations.
Well, it's my personal concern. There's a lot that's been done in the past couple of years since we got the World Cup to really improve action in the country, to improve the roads, to make new venues, to really get the spirit going in South Africa. And it's been an amazing thing for the people in South Africa, and I think it's really brought them together to be saying, hey, the world's coming here to see us. You know, they're coming here to really see what we've accomplished in the past few years. And I think that's the thing that's going to shine the most. We're going to have a lot of these issues or these horror stories that'll come up where some tourist may be murdered or someone may have been, you know, not attended to in hospital, whatever. There'll always be horror stories. But I think the thing that's really going to shine out is to see how different the country is from how it used to be.
Okay. So it's putting Paolo, the country on the map.
So, Paolo, is it usually tradition in South Africa to invite world leaders just so you want to arrest them?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I'm not completely familiar with what you're referring to there, Turkey.
Bashir, South Africa invited the president of Sudan to attend the World Cup, and they also said, but if he comes, we're going to arrest him.
Well, at least they're being forthcoming with it.
Well, that's an interesting point, right? Because he just won an election, the first open elections in what, 20 some years, He is the elected leader of Sudan. So they kind of have to invite all of the dignitaries and leaders. But at the same time, he has an international criminal court warrant for his arrest for human rights crimes. So they also have to arrest him. So they have to do both.
Yeah, that's not like a South Africa-specific thing. That's anybody would be in that bind.
Yeah, I guess so.
It doesn't matter, but it's just hilarious.
It is hilarious.
So what about you
at least
guys?
At least they gave him fair warning. Exactly. You're invited, but...
The thing that I think that's really great for this one especially is that it seems to have taken a huge liking in the States that I never saw in the past. Americans were so involved with football, and I was living in the States a couple of years and the last World Cup they were really seeming to get in the spirit of being a part of this world event. And that's the thing that's really great, is that it's such a world event, and now America's becoming part of the world. And I think it's really going to be a good thing for South Africa to have that as well.
So how about the opening celebration? I heard the lead singer just died in South Africa, was supposed to do it. Any updates on that?
No, not from my knowledge. I mean, we're getting a lot of international artists. Those are the really main ones that are headlining, like the Black Eyed Peas and
yeah. Oh my
Shakira.
God, is there anything that they don't do anymore?
I was just going to say that. I think they're available for birthday parties. They do everything.
That's incredible. But so you guys, what about you? Do you actually care about the World Cup as Paolo is suggesting? Or because personally, I really couldn't give two craps, but I know France obviously is very much into soccer. I don't think the U.S. is, though.
It has become a lot more. In fact, the last World Cup, I went over to Molly's house and watched
I had like a World Cup party.
Yeah,
really?
The U.S. was good.
A lot of my American friends were really getting in the spirit of things. I mean, your sports just dominate your whole year. They just follow one after another. So there's no space for football. But an event like this, you've really I saw a lot of people really getting involved. They played it in like Best Buy. I saw them putting it on big screens. So, I mean, I saw a big following in the States.
U.S. sports fans are terrible front runners. I've followed the World Cup for decades. I've watched it because I was interested in international sports, but I was a weirdo. I had to go seek other people out who were weird like me to watch it. It's only in the last, I'd say, 8 years or so when the U.S. has started to get good. Right. It's not just about, ooh, will they qualify for the cup? But hey, how far will they advance? And maybe there's an outside shot that they could win. Now ESPN has picked it up, which is the major sports network in the U.S. And you don't
you
have to do pay-per-view to watch.
Bad at
yeah, no, exactly. One of the premier U.S. traits is, you know, we don't like to lose.
And we're not interested in losers.
Yeah. We like movies where underdogs win. But they have to win. We don't, you know, well, who's going to win a movie where the underdog loses?
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. We were talking about music just now, and I have been, I have experienced an interesting musical event in the past week, and that is the Eurovision contest. And I'm not even sure that any of you guys know what it is, because it's kind of obscure, even in France. Or at least that's what I thought, because it turns out it's apparently the third most watched televised event in the world, and it's yearly. And it's, for those who don't know, it's a contest between all about 39 countries, I think, mostly in Europe, but there are also outsiders like Israel and some other countries. And each country sends a representative that's going to do a song, and people from all over Europe can vote, and then you choose the best song in the contest. It's sort of a the ancestor to the Idol, you know, reality TV shows.
Right.
And it is most probably the kitschiest thing you can ever imagine. You have like wind machines and dancers in wide clothing and collars, and it is horrendous, completely horrendous. And it's very, very popular in Eastern Europe, mostly, I think, because they go crazy for it. And it's sort of a, it was very interesting, because when I was watching it, I watched the two semifinals, and the French commentators were incredibly mean. Like when one singer would make a mistake during the song, or sort of veer off the tone of the song or something like that, they would make fun of it after the song was over. And I think it does talk about how France really doesn't care about all this and looks down on it quite a bit. So the only way to make it interesting on TV is to take the same tone as people who would be watching it would, the way they would be seeing it.
That's because France hasn't won since 1977.
You had to bring that up, didn't you? You bastard, Merritt.
Busted.
But that's actually my girlfriend's theory. It's like, oh, you idiot. If you had one, you would be completely like propping it up. And there might be some truth to that. But yeah, so do you guys even know about Eurovision? Because apparently it's like the biggest event ever.
I know. I had never heard of it. I Googled it while we were talking. And it does sound like the EU's financial woes have been a problem. Like all these countries have pulled out, because apparently if you win, you have to host the show and put on the big kitschy extravaganza.
Yeah.
And so some countries were kind of afraid. They pulled
out
because they thought, well, if we win, we can't afford to have the big party.
They're sending really bad singers.
Yeah. Bad singer is the standard for that show. But
I find it very difficult to watch. I've seen it a couple of times, but I mean, it's very diverse. Some of the people that come on that show, I mean, it's very different. You have to be really into it to watch it, I think. I've seen it a couple of times, but
I've heard the name kicked around, but I never knew what it was.
I know, well, exactly. I'd heard that word, but I didn't know what. Wow, this is fascinating.
It's very popular with the gay community because it's so, you know, kitsch and flashy, and it's very popular. It's how to explain what it is. You have like traditional songs from these countries sometimes. You have, oh my God, it's horrible. It's very it's very much fun to watch. But to
then why are we talking about it? Because it
is one of the longest running live television events ever. It's been going since 1956. I'm reading on the Wikipedia article, and it's never missed a year.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
Yeah. And what you were saying, Tom, is very true. Apparently, Iceland was absolutely terrified of winning. Because if they have to organize it again, you know, they are in a horrible financial crisis, it will bring the country down again. They really can't do it.
Yeah, and Norway spent $31 million, 200 million kroner, to host it. And then I guess one of the front runners is from Azerbaijan, and they're saying, look, if Azerbaijan wins this, we're screwed. Like, they can't have the big party. Yeah.
It's terrible. The Russia was hosting it last year, and apparently they spent, what was it, 32, I can't remember. Well, a lot of money.
It's kind of like golf in Japan. Have you heard about this? Where if you get a hole in one in Japan when you're golfing, you're supposed to give away some of that good luck. And so people are terrified of getting a hole in one in Japan because it can bankrupt you, because you have to like throw a huge party and buy presents for everyone you know.
I've lived in Japan for 4 years, but I didn't know that. Thank God I don't play golf.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, so Turkey is sick of Eurovision. But you guys don't participate, right, Turkey?
I don't believe so. I've heard about it a lot. I do know they cover it in the news when it happens. But at least when the results are in, so.
Yeah, well.
So definitely the results are covered.
If you have a chance to. The country of Turkey is in it, yeah.
But not Saudi Arabia.
If you have a chance to watch it, definitely at least Google. Okay, I'll tell you what. In honor of Greece and actually my Greek heritage, because I was born with a Greek passport. Google the
holding one.
And, well, I had yes, basically.
Stop that.
But no, I was actually Greek when I was born. I only became French later. So Google the Eurovision Greek. Entry for 2010, and I can guarantee you're gonna laugh quite a bit. It's very kitsch.
Oh, the final is tonight. I'm at Eurovision.tv. Oh, I'm watching it on the internet.
Yeah, you can watch it at Eurovision.tv, basically, because they can't really find prominent channels to broadcast it anymore in some places. So it's going to be streaming live at the same time, so you can watch it.
It is a live webcast. Oh, my goodness.
And you can download the songs on iTunes afterwards.
I'm excited.
So please, Molly, root for Greece, because that's
you
the one.
You go, Greece.
There you go. They need all the help they can get at this point. So let's move on to something else.
There is one thing about, since we're in entertainment, apparently Sex and the City 2 is banned in the UAE.
Really?
Yes.
Ugh, I wish it was banned here.
Come on. I love Sex and the City.
Oh, stop that.
What? No, Molly, you don't actually like the show?
I liked the show, okay, but I think the movies are just an abomination.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, the first one actually made me furious. I sent a text in the middle of it that said, "This is 2 hours of my life I will never get back."
There we go. We knew we were going to get a rant at one point.
And the second one, I know exactly. You have done it, but I want to know what Turkey thinks about this, because I thought I saw the previews for that and I thought, well, I don't think that four American women can go traipsing off to Abu Dhabi and go around in like tank tops. Is that okay? It just seems like that's not how women are supposed to.
Maybe Dubai. I doubt it would be possible in Abu Dhabi.
That's what I thought. And isn't that where they go? I think they go to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah,
and that's
why it's banned there. They're pissed off at the movie.
Yeah, why? Because what the hell? Did they go to some sort of Club Med Abu Dhabi and totally ignore the fact that, you know, women are
No, actually they were banned from shooting the movie there. So they went and they shot it, the entire movie, in Morocco.
That movie is bullcrap.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
They shot the entire movie in Morocco, and now it's banned from being shown in Abu Dhabi and the UAE because they think it's insulting.
I cannot believe that the movie industry would produce a cultural product where they do something and pretend it was done somewhere else. That's outrageous.
That's shocking. But so, seriously, are you going to have all these rich New York women showing up in Abu Dhabi and, you know, in sleeveless shirts and getting, like, run out of the country? I just...
No, you know, about Abu Dhabi is you're more thinking about Saudi Arabia. Abu Dhabi is closer to Dubai because they're the same country, but Dubai is more liberal. So you can find people like that in some ways, but when it comes to Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi is a little more strict than Dubai, and they women walk freely. But yeah, I think clothes would be, there is a limit to how much you can show off.
So how they were pissed off because they're pretending it's in Abu Dhabi, it's happening in Abu Dhabi, and they are and they are sleeveless.
No, it's the whole movie. They go to clubs, they pick up guys and so on. It's just the whole atmosphere is just corrupted.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm still going to go see it. It might not be good, but
can't believe
you're not going to go see
movie.
That, Patrick. What?
Are you serious?
Okay, first of all, we're going to review it on the movie Licious, so I have to see it for the show.
Well, okay, if it's for work.
But
not the reason you're going
to
see it.
No, and I'm completely open about this. I would have gone to see it probably. I really loved the series itself. And I thought the first movie was kind of crappy, but okay, I also have a movie.
Kind of.
I also have a movie pass that, you know, I pay like 20 euros for the month and I can go to any movies I want. So I'm not going to really be paying for it, if that's any consolation. I'm going to be paying for it with the time I'm going to lose, but that's it.
You'll never get that time back. I just want you to remember that. That time is going to go. It's just going into the abyss. Gone
wait a
forever.
Minute. I'm reading this article, and granted, it's a Seattle newspaper, but they're quoting Vivian Salma of Bloomberg News, who's saying that one of the major objections doesn't have to do with the taboos. It's the fact that they show them traipsing around Abu Dhabi and riding camels and confronting women in face veils. And they're like, this is just stereotyping us. It doesn't show the diversity that we actually have in the UAE.
Oh my God! A Hollywood movie stereotyping some population.
But that you could see
I
that
think your
from
first mistake
the preview.
He's looking for factual information in Sex and the City.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Right, that's true. It's not like it.
See, it's a good thing I brought this topic on. We got the Molly rant.
it wasn't exactly a full blown rant.
It's true because I'm just sputtering with rage because I can't. I don't know. I can't even really put my finger on what exactly it is about the movie that seems so gross to me. But it does seem just culturally bizarre.
Well,
it seems to me that putting those two things together, like four slutty New York women who dress like whores and taking them to Abu Dhabi and then involving like camels. And I mean, it does. It sort of feels like having Mexicans play Native Americans. It's like, what is this? It's just like gross Hollywood cultural appropriation.
I have to say it does seem a little bit like that. I'm not going.
Especially when there are actual serious feminist issues at stake here, you know? Not even feminist in the sort of the ranty sense, but actually, you know, issues of women's rights are relatively serious to me in those countries. And then you make it all like about stilettos. Like, I don't know. There's just something so gross about the whole thing.
Wow. I you've actually brought up a point that does resonate with me. I'm sort of a little bit convinced now. I'm still going to go see it, but I will keep that argument in mind, and I might make it when I review the show.
I'm just curious why they picked Abu Dhabi over Dubai. If you wanted to go to the UAE, like,
yeah.
Why did they go there anyway?
I don't know. That is
exactly.
Also what makes it really irritating. It's like the show was done. The show was finished. The movie was sort of a cap on it to bring the real conclusion. And now they're sort of bringing it back from the dead and getting the corpse of Sex and the City out of its coffin and reanimating it. I think
totally.
That's, yeah, a little bit of, yeah.
It'd be cooler if it was a zombie movie.
That would be awesome.
Sex and the City 2, Zombie Apocalypse. That I would go see happily.
I would definitely see that.
Hey there. I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
I'm scared.
There's one more thing. Did you see some TV show on MTV called True Life? Resist the Power, Saudi Arabia.
What? No.
No, I don't. I sadly do not watch MTV much.
I don't.
Okay,
watch
you have
TV.
To. Everybody has to watch it. You get a. They've went into Saudi Arabia. I don't know how they got their visas into Saudi Arabia, and the permission to photo everything and record everything. They got four teens, Saudi teens, and they've been following them and their life in different aspects as they discuss what they like, what they dislike, and they're more on the liberal side. But it's a very interesting show. You should take a look and get a basic idea. It gives you some idea about Saudi Arabia.
Wow, that sounds actually interesting.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's called True Life, Resist the Power, Saudi Arabia.
Cool, thanks. Hey, you know what else is resisting
resist
the power?
Power? How they resist...
Sorry, go ahead, Polo.
Sorry. Well, how are they resisting the power in Saudi Arabia? That sounds like quite a bold...
Well, the idea is they bring people who are against some of the traditions of Saudi Arabia. Like, they got one guy who wants to be free to date, so that he's resisting. Another guy who is trying to be into politics and defending women's rights, so he's resisting. A girl who is defending her right to ride a bicycle in the street and wear what she likes, that's another resistance. A group of three guys who are into heavy metal, and they have their own band, and they want the right to play it whenever they want in Saudi Arabia.
That's awesome. Wow. How is it being received in Saudi Arabia? Are people talking about it? Or?
Oh, definitely. They're preparing to sue them.
Oh, jeez.
Everybody who was on the show is going to be sued.
Really? Like the people who participated in the show are going to be sued?
Yes.
On what grounds?
Yes.
Fighting the power?
Promoting the lies and promoting corruption and loss of values.
Wow.
There's 100
I'm surprised it even got on air.
It's MTV.
It got on air internationally. But Turkey, tell me the truth. Are you the guy who wanted to be allowed to date freely?
I would love to be allowed to date freely. No, but I'm not the guy on the
No, he's the guy in the metal band.
Oh, yeah. Now, if it was a jazz, I might.
All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about the strikes in France, because we've been having...
What?
Strikes
in France?
Are we going to ever stop hearing about strikes in France?
I'm sorry. That's what we do. That's our thing. We do wine and strikes.
Must
you know,
be Tuesday.
Change the show from the Phileas Club to the French Strikes Show.
So
what's every time?
What's happening is that we are planning on reworking our retirement laws and agreements. And it's now the retirement is at 60. So you can retire if you've worked all your years when you're 60 years old. And the government would like to push it to 62 or, well, to push it to anything, because obviously people are living longer. Healthcare costs a lot, especially on elderly people. So we need more people to work longer. And quite frankly, the idea of retiring at 60 is sickening to me. But people today are in full strength and full health when they're 60. And not only I don't think they should want to retire, but I don't think I will want to retire. What the hell am I going to... Well, okay. I'm sure I can find stuff to do, but...
I think that's kind of funny, Patrick. You know why?
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Because you apparently are having too many people who are getting old and you want them to stay. We want to lower the retirement age because we have too many young people. We can't find jobs for them.
Well, there was a little bit of, you know, going like that, too, at one point, but...
Yeah, but here in Saudi Arabia, we have 50% of the Saudi population are under 21 years old.
Jeez. So you have to retire when you're, what, 35?
Apparently, if this continues.
But yeah, so basically, the government wants to push for longer work time, and everyone in the past week, everyone has been going on strike, and the country has once again gone to ground to a halt. Well, not that much, but transportation is all messed up, and it's horrible, horrible, and it's been happening again and again and again, because every time any government talks about raising the age of retirement, everyone in the country, well, you know, the people who do strike, go on strike, paralyze everything, so the government backs down. And the big question now is the government going to back down again? It's been one of its big arguments that it's not going to back down and it's going to do it, but it seems sort of... I think they're going to do it this time, but every time they have to chop down their ambition so much that it doesn't change a lot. And the situation is, obviously, as everyone knows, getting dire, because it's the same in every Western country. So, yeah, that's been a big thing in the country this week. I guess you guys don't have the same issue because you can work till you die. But
well, we have... different. I can't keep track of the different, like, Social Security. I think you get it 62, but it's full. If you get more benefits if you wait till 67 or something. I may have that wrong, but it's like there's a moving target.
Is it like acceptable for you guys to retire at 60? Is it like the thing everyone does, or do you guys want to keep working?
Well, from perspective, you want to retire by 30. You know, you want to be that rich Wall Street person. Right. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, Molly. 60s.
Very unusual, like at just 60. I mean, I think that, you know, that's considered very early retirement. I think most people target 65, and then 62 or 63 is kind of early retirement. 60 would be like, you made a lot of money, you know?
Well, that's interesting that you go straight to you made a lot of money, and Tom, you thought about the guy who retires at 30 because he's a hotshot. In here, it's not really that you made a lot of money. The idea is that you've worked, you've clocked in your hours for whatever, 30, I don't know how many years, and you've paid your taxes, and at that point, you're entitled to retire and get money from the state. And that's why people are fighting for it, sort of in the same way, but less outrageous than Greek people are fighting to get their I'm arriving on time bonus.
Well, but how much money is it? I mean, I guess, I think there's a sense here that the payouts, you know, Social Security payouts, are not enough. That would be if you didn't have a very sizable chunk of savings, that to live on Social Security is so-called, we call it, you know, fixed income living, and that means you don't have any money. Like it's a very, you know, it's a very lowered standard of living to go onto Social Security only.
I have to say, I've seen people, you know, older people working at in the US, I mean, when I've been in the US a few times, at malls and shopping centers and stuff like that. And it was surprising because it doesn't happen here. These older people, they can live off their retirement money, and there's also the issue that retirement money is not enough, but it's indexed on your salary for the past, you know, the time you've worked. So you're going to get maybe 70% of your last salary in the past 10 years. So mostly it should allow you to get by. So it's not that big of an issue, but it is sort of an issue for some people. Sorry, Paolo, you were saying something.
I was just saying, from my experience, Americans, their lives really revolve around work far more than anywhere else I've been. They just seem to live to work. No offense, Tom and Molly, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys do it on a completely different level to everyone else. I mean, that's the reason why I moved away.
It's very true.
We're crazy.
No, yeah, Americans are totally addicted to work. That's absolutely true. And I think that what happens with some of the older Americans is that part of it is living on a fixed income and not having enough money. But the other part of it is that they get bored. They don't know what to do with themselves. And they get lonely.
I mean,
work is a very social outlet.
From what I've found is you guys don't take a lot of time. You don't take a lot of time off from your work life to say go away for vacation or go go and experience other things, you kind of revolve your whole lives around the way you work. And for me, that's a very foreign thing. Here in South Africa, it's very common to take 4 weeks off for Christmas. Like that's a normal vacation here in South Africa, and in the States, it's just unheard of, you know.
And it's funny too, because I hear you say that and I think, oh man, I want to live there. But I guess I could take that kind of time off at Christmas if I had vacation built up, but it's somewhat unthinkable.
People would look at you funny.
Oh, totally. And I would think people in the States would definitely think, wow, it would be very indulgent.
Hmm. In France, we have 5 weeks of vacation a year.
When I was working there, and they would be like, why aren't you coming in on a Saturday? Like, what's wrong with you? We're working on Sunday too. Like, you better be here. And it's like, I'd enjoy a weekend, but you all seem to think that it's strange that I want to have a weekend. But
yeah,
it's the norm there.
It's different at different places, you know, different work cultures vary, but overall in the US it is more of a tradition of you work hard all the time to, you know, to prove your worth and build up your future so that you can someday retire and then get bored and die. I mean, that's the overall arc that everyone is apparently shooting for, and it's ridiculous. And we don't even get the vacation time. 2 weeks is the standard. If you get more than 2 weeks vacation, you're in a lush position, or you've been somewhere long enough to build up some seniority. But it's not, you know, getting 4 weeks off per year is almost unthinkable.
So we get 5 weeks. What's funny go ahead, Molly.
Well, I was just going to say it's very cultural too. I mean, it definitely varies by state. And as the younger workforce is starting to come in, they're really starting to change some of those things and talk about work-life balance more. But, you know, like CNET was recently bought by CBS, which is a very old established television network in the United States. They're located on the East Coast. They have a very different work ethic. And they think that we Californians at CNET are just like the laziest people ever. I got in a terrible fight last night with one of the people I work with who came from CBS, who said, look, that whole thing where you're closed for a week between Christmas and New Year's, that's ridiculous. It, you know, it is just, that is a luxury that I can't even believe exists. And I bet it's going to go away. And if you don't like it, you're just going to find a new job and we'll replace you. And that is very much the attitude of like this East Coast, you know, this big old established East Coast company. I wish I had had you on the line last night so I could say, how about 4 weeks at Christmas, like they do in South Africa?
Well, you know, we also have the 35-hour week, which is enforced in France now. Sort of wobbly, but yeah, 35 hours. However, one interesting piece of information is that apparently the French people are amongst the most productive people in the world. Meaning that we might work less duration, less time, but we do a lot more when we do work. So
I think that is a classic theory, which is it doesn't matter how much time you're actually forced to work, you're going to do the same amount of work. So, I mean, I always have that experience when you're going off on a holiday and you have to do twice as much work in advance to cover all of the stuff that you're going to miss while you're gone. And so you get more productive, you get more efficient because you have to pack all that stuff in.
Yeah, so there you go. 35-hour weeks for the win. Mm-hmm. All right. I guess we
20.
Or 4, as some people would say.
Right, right.
That's what they say in Greece. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Yay, I'm not the only one rating on Greece.
I'm not.
So I guess we are close to bringing the show to a I want to find another word than close, because I don't want to make a repetition, but
end.
To bring the close end. To an end. anyone else has a topic they want to talk about before we go?
Nope, I need breakfast.
For Molly, I had a super interesting thing I wanted to talk about, but since Molly has to apparently have cereal, we're going to go. I do, however, want to mention very quickly the fact that the iPad came out yesterday in Europe, and it was pretty crazy still. I mean, a few queues and definitely sold out already everywhere. So it's not giving any sign of stopping.
So did you download the Paris Match or whatever magazine?
Yeah, I did. It's pretty well done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been on the iPad since day one.
Yeah, yeah. So you have one too, Turkey. I think I saw a tweet.
Yeah, yeah. My mom got me a gift, a 3G last week.
Oh, that's sweet. So Molly, thanks, still Mom. Hate it?
I don't hate it. It just didn't work for me.
Right.
It didn't.
No, I didn't mean... I'm sorry. I didn't mean it as, yeah, right. I just meant it, right.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't think that it shouldn't exist or anything, but I have a netbook and a computer and a smartphone, yeah. And I just didn't need it. And an e-reader. It was too heavy for me. It's just too heavy.
I fully expected to not really love
it. We still don't have it here in South Africa.
Oh, sorry. I should have sent you mine.
And they're you'd be surprised how much they're charging us just for an iPhone. It's $1,000 for one iPhone.
$1,000. Let's send iPads to South Africa. We'll get rich and we can retire.
Right. Hey, they're expensive here too. You know how much the iPad was sold? They got the iPad from day one for somehow, and they sold it for $2,000.
Jeez.
Oh my gosh.
And there were people who actually paid that much.
I like it. I like it, but I do think it's expensive at $500. $2,000, jeez. I mean, you guys have oil in the world.
Oh yeah, right. It's just the type of people who want to be the first. So they can't wait until until now it's officially not here, not in Saudi Arabia. So it's all gray market. So
Yeah, the fact that it's now released in Europe is bad news for us Americans because we were all making tons of money selling them on eBay. And now the market's dropped out.
The iPad market on eBay has dropped. Sorry, right. Molly. All those nickels and dimes you were storing for your retirement or your outrageous one-week holiday in Christmas.
My 1 week.
All right. I think we are indeed going to bring the show to an end. I want to thank all of you guys for being on. It was tremendous fun. And I will ask each of you to tell me where people can find you on the internet if they want more. Turkey, you go first.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, which is Twitter/Saudi. And I'll keep you updated there. I have my website also, but I haven't updated my website for
still,
a while.
Still, Turkey, you're silencing a little bit. Your headphones are probably the kind that makes it silent. You're good. Go ahead.
All right. So if you can check me on Twitter at twitter.com/Saudi. Also, you can check my website, although I haven't updated for a long time since I'm working on my new business. And the website is at saudilife.net.
Thank you. Paolo, do you have a Twitter account? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, no, I have a Twitter account. I mean, there's not much going on there. It's twitter.com/paoloaudio.
Paolo Audio. We didn't really hear that completely, so it's Paolo Audio like audio. Anything else?
Yeah. No, that's it. That's it.
Okay, cool. Tom.
but I'm not ready. TomMerritt.com collects all of the stuff I do because I do a bunch of different podcasts. But just while we were recording the Phileas Club, twit.tv/TNT went live, and that's the new show that I'm doing on the Twit Network every afternoon at 5:30 Eastern Time, Tech News Today. So check that out.
Awesome. I'm very excited. I'm also a little bit scared of the Clash of the Titans that is going to be two tech shows that, like, we're going to be listening to Buzz Out Loud and Tech News Today and listen for the one who says something silly that the other one is going to correct afterwards. That's going to be fun.
Right.
You've got that much time on your hands, Patrick?
I always have time for Tom and Molly.
Oh, well done.
So, Tech News Today is going to start on, this week.
And, June 1st.
That's going to be fun. And Molly, where can people find you? I'm sure they know, but tell it.
They might not. I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/Mollywood. And then you can find my Molly Rants blog at news.com/Molly-Rants. And, of course, at cnettv.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. You can find me at twitter.com/notpatrick. You can find the show and comments and all of that on the show's blog, which is thephileasclub.com. And that's going to be it for us. We will talk to you again in 1 month in June, and we'll have more fun then. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you soon. Bye. All right. Well, thanks very much, everyone. I'm going to have to go pretty fast because I have to prepare food before Eurovision starts.
yes.
And by the way, I didn't go to Eurovision on my own accord. It was my girlfriend who told me I had to. So she's looking at me angrily now.
I'm gonna very unfortunate, Patrick.
Yeah,
I think you should just be proud, Patrick. Don't try to hide your love of Eurovision.
Who wears the pants in the house, Patrick?
Well, she does.
Good answer. Good answer.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.